Hello, I'm Michael Hainsworth. Addressing the crisis in Canada's healthcare system will be a key priority in 2024. For some, the solution is to expand access to healthcare through the private sector. But can we really debate the role of private healthcare in Canada if we don't understand how it works? Meet Catherine Frohbeck, a professor in the Department of Political Science at Dalhousie University.
If we are in fact sliding toward private health care in any case, because both of these push factors that I mentioned and because of these supply factors that I also mentioned, that if we are going that direction, well, maybe we should take the bull by the horns and be much more explicit about what we want it to look like and how we intend to protect those who are most vulnerable right now. A massive investment of federal funding into the existing public system could also lead to very favorable outcomes. But I have to say, looking at the tea leaves, this doesn't seem at this point to be a real possibility.
In her commentary for the C.D. Howe Institute, titled The Scope and Nature of Private Healthcare in Canada, she writes that the intense debate pitting private versus public healthcare in this country needs a reality check. For that reality check, she joins us now. Thank you for joining us.
My pleasure.
Let's start by pointing out, as you did in your commentary, that this is not a conversation about whether or not private healthcare is a solution.
That's correct. It's just an attempt to better understand the lay of the land, to understand how the private-public mix that we have in Canada works and what some of the tensions are with that current mix.
So then perhaps we need to sort of define the terms, because as we think of healthcare today, we think of it as the Canadian solution spearheaded by Tommy Douglas. But his vision and the reality that we have on a province by province basis is not exactly the same.
Right. So we have to first distinguish between private healthcare delivery and private healthcare financing or funding. And you have to understand that you can really mix and match public and private aspects of healthcare. You can have aspects of healthcare that are publicly funded and delivered, or privately funded and delivered, or privately funded and publicly delivered, where money follows the patient, or publicly funded and privately delivered. So Canada is mostly the latter. In fact, technically, Canada is not really a so-called national health system like the UK, but rather a national health insurance system where private healthcare providers treat us free at point of contact and then submit their claims to the public insurer, usually provincial government. So we have a huge private delivery system. Most fee-for-service doctors, for example, dentists, optometrists, psychologists, physiotherapists, and so on. But in the case of most physician or hospital services, these costs are covered by public insurance. Now, technically as well, a lot of hospitals are private with my ears, insofar as they are private, not-for-profit entities. And this gets a bit confusing because hospitals these days are usually just dumped into the public expenditure envelope in provincial budgets, which is fair enough as the majority of their funding comes, unsurprisingly, from governments. But unlike fully public entities, they're more arm's length. They have boards of directors, for example, who bear a certain amount of formal responsibility for decisions they make, such as managing investments or carrying debt. And some hospitals, especially children's hospitals, which can attract a lot of fundraising, can make a big chunk of their financing through direct fundraising and charitable donations. And finally, I suppose at the same time, Canada also does have some private healthcare funding. Right? A lot of people have private health insurance. So a lot of us have Blue Cross, for example, often through their employers, but not necessarily. And that covers things like pharmaceuticals or contact lens or braces for your kids or the physiotherapy you need for playing too much basketball in your youth. And what makes Canada somewhat distinctive here is that many provinces do not permit private insurance to cover anything that's publicly insured, although, again, this varies across provinces.
So then let's talk about that in relation to the Canada Health Act, specifically its main components. Is there a disconnect between how healthcare is being delivered on the ground and the legal framework that the CHA has that governs the system?
Right. There's a couple of separate things here. So you can think about how healthcare is regulated independently of the Canada Health Act, but then you can bring the Canada Health Act in because that complicates things a whole lot more. So in terms of provincial regulation alone, now we have to remember that private versus public healthcare is not a black or white situation. It's not a matter that just because services are offered in the private sphere, well, anything goes, right? Of course, private services can be largely unregulated. I mean, that's true for almost anything. You can open up a bakery in Moose Jaw and call anything you bake a baguette, right? But in Paris, the production of baguettes is much more regulated. It has to conform to certain standards. It's pretty hard to get a bad baguette in Paris. But they've made a conscious decision to regulate something that isn't regulated elsewhere. So whether you want to regulate private healthcare services is completely up to the respective jurisdiction, the provinces in this case. So most provinces can and do allow for the direct provision of private healthcare in principle. But then they say, yes, but if you want to provide services privately, you have to do so under certain conditions. So maybe you can't charge more than you could charge in the public system. Or as Saskatchewan says, you can provide services privately, except that if private provision causes problems for the public system, well, then the government can change the definition of insured services so that they become only available in the public system, right? So there's lots of ways of limiting the viability of private healthcare, even while making it completely legal. And generally, the larger provinces have the most stringent regulatory provisions. And the best example of this, of course, is Ontario, which says, well, if you want to practice medicine, you have to do so in the public system, except for a handful of grandfathered people out there. And that's because Ontario has enough population density that private parental health care could be quite lucrative. Now, on the other hand, the Atlantic provinces have amongst the most lenient regulatory provisions, as there aren't as many large lucrative pockets of potential customers. So, you know, fewer good business prospects for private healthcare ventures. And then you probably want to talk about how the Canada Health Act is layered on top of that.
Well, let's talk about that, particularly because I think a lot of the critics of broadening private access to healthcare, we're seeing this debate particularly in Ontario recently, is that this is a thin edge to the wedge that will pry open the entire healthcare system. It sounds, though, like what you're suggesting is that there are provisions within the Canada Health Act that will ensure that it's just not going to be a free-for-all, and that I'm not going to find myself being told, well, you need a hip replaced, but if you want to get hip replacement pro premium plus, you know, you'll have to open your wallet.
Okay, well, let's talk about the Canada Health Act here then. You know, the Canada Health Act itself is only about 6 pages long, or about 12 pages as it's in both official languages. But it's actually quite complicated when you start unpacking it. We all know about the 5 criteria provinces need to accept in order to get federal funding, right? It's public insurance, universality, portability, accessibility, and comprehensiveness, right? But there are also other important elements to the Canada Health Act, such as I call it the teeth of the Act, which is sections 18 and 19, which require the minister to levy fines for user fees and for extra billing. And then, of course, there's also federal interpretation letters, which attempt to clarify the expectations surrounding the provision of health care. Now, of these, the criterion which attracts the most interest is usually that of comprehensiveness, which states something like, provinces must ensure all insured services provided by doctors and hospitals. So, on the face of it, this seems straightforward enough, especially if you live in Ontario, where the province stipulates that doctors can't sell their services directly to patients. But But in all other provinces, they can under conditions that vary from province to province. So then people say, well, hold on a sec here. If these insured services must be provided publicly, as the Canada Health Act says, then how the heck can they be allowed to be provided privately under the Canada Health Act? It doesn't make sense. So here's where all the legalese comes in, right? So it's not just the Canada Health Act, it's the Canada Health Act and how it links in to the various kinds of provincial legislation, right? So in general terms, in many provinces, but not all, if something is an insured service, then it should be covered publicly, right? But what do we mean by insured service? Well, then you have to read the fine print in the provincial statutes and regulations, right? So in some provinces, for example, the definition of an insured service doesn't simply address the kind of service itself, but rather the person providing it, right? So an insured service is a medically necessary service that is provided by a physician, for example. So in these provinces, if, for example, a GP does a strep test, then it is an insured service. But if a nurse practitioner or a pharmacist does it, then it is not an insured service. And as it is, by definition, not an insured service, it can be provided by these professions privately, right? Another example, what an insured service is can also depend not only on what it is and who provides it, but where it's being provided, right? So, again, the Canada Health Act stipulates, you know, GPs or in hospital service, a service, medically necessary service being provided in a hospital, then it is an insured service. But if the same service is not provided in a hospital, then the same service can be considered uninsured and therefore can be provided privately. And that's why there was such a dust up last year between the federal health minister and the provinces, right? He said that medically necessary diagnostic services provided anywhere in public or in private settings had to be covered publicly as per Ottawa's introduction of the 2018 diagnostic services policy, to which many provinces then responded, well, I'm sorry, sir, but we disagree on this point. Diagnostics provided privately do not have to be publicly insured, right? So there's still a little bit of contretemps going on there. Or another example, so if insured services have to be provided in a hospital, who defines what a hospital in fact is? Can provinces say, well, the West Wing on the third floor of this hospital is no longer legally part of this hospital as per next Tuesday. And so, therefore, services provided there can be provided privately. Again, it's all in the fine print.
So we know the regulation plays a large role in the breadth and the depth of private health care in any healthcare system. But as you pointed out, you know, healthcare is a provincial purview, but it sounds like there are some federal and provincial regulatory constraints that shape the healthcare landscape. If at the federal level, where the money is coming in from, if at the federal level we're not happy with what's going on at the provincial level, are there any levers to be pulled at the federal level to sort of keep us on track with that Tommy Douglas-esque approach to it from a philosophical and a policy perspective?
Well, the simple answer is, well, it depends how much money the feds have that they're willing to shovel out to the provinces. You know, the provisions in the Canada Health Act are actually quite minimal. And essentially, they set out the conditions for federal funding. Right? If you want health transfers, you have to provide some level of public coverage. And the coverage that you do provide has to be provided equitably, right? There's no stipulation that private health care has to be banned or limited. That's completely the province's call, right? Because Ottawa has minimal regulatory authority in the field of health care, it really has to use carrots rather than sticks to shepherd the provinces in a particular direction. But what's been happening is that, you know, the provinces say that this one-size-fits-all funding model really isn't helpful to them, which is why the current Liberal government has been negotiating bilateral funding agreements with the provinces, right? So Ontario, you say that this is what matters to you. Well, we still want to have, you know, an emphasis upon data. We want to have an emphasis upon mental health. So let's get together so that we can make sure we achieve federal priorities, but we do so within the context of your provincial priorities and concerns. And that way we can come to some agreement where, you know, we're willing to give you all this extra cash. But in the end, you know, political will is much more relevant than the Canada Health Act itself. The current Liberal government has been rather more assertive, I think, in attempting to ensure a stronger public health care system. But Conservative governments have generally been much more willing to let provinces do whatever they want. Yeah, and to date, most provinces have been willing to constrain access to private services. But the question now, I think, is the extent to which this current crisis in access to healthcare is really shifting provincial priorities. You know, the issue of diagnostic services is quite indicative of this. So if people can get timely access to diagnostic services in the private sector, and they can do this without straining the provincial treasury, then provinces will probably continue to stand up to Ottawa on this. And the issue then becomes one of equity and the, you know, the willingness to sanction two-tier healthcare or not.
To your point, the nature of healthcare has changed dramatically since public insurance was first introduced. So let's talk a little bit more about those trends that are disrupting and putting some pressure on the current system.
Right. Okay. So public insurance in Canada goes back a long time. The legislation on which the current Canada Health Act was built, the Hospital Insurance Act and the Medical Care Act, were introduced in 1957 and 1966, I think, respectively. But the nature of healthcare today is vastly different from what it was at the inception of public insurance, and mostly in a good way, right? We have, for example, an incredible number of tests and treatments available for a huge number of conditions now that we didn't have back then. We have increasingly sophisticated IT systems, including AI, for better or for worse, and so on. But of course, each of these achievements causes problems of their own. We have so many diagnostic tests available, but we need specialists and technicians to run them and to interpret them, and they cost money. We have tons of more drugs available, but now it takes so much time for a doctor and a patient to sit down and figure out which one works best, what the adverse events are, what the drug interactions might be, and so on and so forth. And many of these drugs are incredibly expensive. And for every lovely data set you have in the healthcare sector, you've got a cadre of healthcare providers cursing the time it takes to input this data into their computer so you can have this data set. So every medical achievement can also put another kind of stress on the system. You know, people are no longer dying from farming accidents, but which is great, but they live longer and eventually they die of cancer, which can be very expensive to treat. So the way healthcare is done and even the nature of health and illness itself is so vastly different now than half a century ago. And these changes can put serious pressures on the healthcare system in ways that nobody could have anticipated, you know, half a century ago.
So then how might the provinces constrain the expansion of private healthcare? How might they encourage it? It sounds like a lot of the incentives for expansion of private healthcare has to do with easing the pressure on the public system. And you sort of pointed out as well that there's an element of easing the pressure on the public purse too. But in many cases, in a private healthcare environment, it's the public purse that still ends up paying for it.
Yeah, that's right. I mean, we have to understand what's happening now as push factors, and I guess I call them pull factors, So there's more demand. There's a huge amount of demand, as we well know, right? So there's this massive push for a number of reasons, some of which are outlined, some of which are, you know, the aging of the population, increase of immigration, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So there's more demand for healthcare services. But there's also changes in the way that healthcare is being provided as well. And the actual manifestation of private care in any province is really the confluence of pressures on the system, right? The explosive demand for more services in conjunction with different ways of providing services, right? So, you know, many important diagnostic services, again, are now provided in private facilities, which they weren't 60 years ago, right? Because these are huge expensive pieces of equipment. And of course, you'd find them in the hospitals. And now tons, I mean, the number of private diagnostic clinics across Canada just exploding. And another important development, the pull factor or the supply factor, if you will, another important development that's been happening in conjunction with increase of demand is the changing way that services are being supplied. And of these, probably the most important development has been the growth in the number of non-physician healthcare providers, you know, especially though not exclusively nurse practitioners, not only the number of them, but also the growth in their respective scopes of practice. So when the Canada Health Act was set out, you know, in the early 80s, in fact, when the initial legislation was set out, we didn't have nurse practitioners at all. And in the 1980s, we had them, but not too many of them, with very strictly constrained scopes of practice. Well, what's been happening, especially in the past decade or two, and certainly for other professions throughout COVID, where scopes of practice, you know, quietly expanded quite radically, but in the past decade or two, especially for nurse practitioners, their numbers have skyrocketed. You know, CIHI documents that quite nicely. The numbers have skyrocketed, and their scopes of practice have also expanded considerably, so that in some provinces, nurse practitioners' scopes of practice are very similar to those of GPs. But again, as we've seen, they're not bound by the provisions of the Canada Health Act, depending on how provinces define insured services. And the other joker in the deck, I think, is virtual care, right? We can now access primary care online from anywhere in the world. So who should pay for what, under what conditions? It's a huge game changer. And we're just beginning to sort this all out, and it's really complicated, right? But, you know, once I can access primary care at my computer in my pajamas anytime I want, you arguably already have two-tier healthcare.
Catherine, this has been a fascinating conversation, which could go on forever. And frankly, 2024 will certainly be an important year for this conversation. For someone who's been listening to our time together, what's the key takeaway you want them to leave with when it comes to the discussion about expanding private healthcare in Canada?
All right, well, let's go back to the fundamentals here. And I think we have to keep in mind that public insurance is not a good in and of itself, right? It's a good thing because of its ability to provide reasonably equitable access to decent services. But the question is this the only or the best way to provide good services equitably, right? So another country might require somebody earning $300,000 a year to pay 30% of the cost of their healthcare services, while somebody earning, say, $70,000 or less would be covered at 100%, right? So why exactly is this an inferior method of healthcare provision? Now, there are arguments to be made, right? For example, you could say, well, in the first place, you know, it's much more administratively complicated, which it is. And others might say, well, it provides a toehold for aggressive private firms that can push for more and more advantageous conditions, which is true as well. So, you know, opening up scope away from 100% coverage is no panacea. But I guess the point is that, you know, if we are in fact sliding toward private healthcare in any case, because both of these push factors that I mentioned and because of these, you know, supply factors that I also mentioned, that, you know, if we are going that direction, well, maybe we should take the bull by the horns and be much more explicit about what we want it to look like and how we intend to protect those who are most vulnerable. Right now, a massive investment of federal funding into the existing public system could also lead to very favorable outcomes. But I have to say, you know, looking at the tea leaves, this doesn't seem at this point to be a real possibility. You know, we're dealing with a massive price shock and we're looking at a majority conservative government. So, you know, do we really want to ignore the options available here, or should we try to think about how best to configure them in a way that protects an equitable system of universal health care?
Catherine, thank you so much for your time and insight today.
My pleasure.
Catherine Frohlbeck is a professor in the Department of Political Science at Dalhousie University. Her commentary titled "The Scope and Nature of Private Healthcare in Canada" can be found at cdhow.org. I'm Michael Hainsworth. Thanks for joining us. We've got a busy 2024 plan, so please subscribe using your favorite podcast app or on YouTube so you don't miss these important conversations. Thanks again.
You've been listening to the C.D. Howe Institute podcast with Michael Hainsworth. Subscribe on iTunes, Google Play, and Spotify. The C.D. Howe Institute is an independent, not-for-profit research institute whose mission is to raise living standards by fostering economically sound public policies. The Institute is widely considered to be Canada's most influential think tank and a trusted source of essential policy intelligence, distinguished by nonpartisan, evidence-based research and subject to definitive expert review. Visit cdhow.org and follow us on Twitter and LinkedIn. Thank you.